Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Greg Burley. We'll kick things off in the Premier League, shall we? Burnley in action against Manchester United. United absolutely dominated the first half, thoroughly deserving of the lead going into the break. Paul Pogba showed some flashes of brilliance in that opening 45 minutes, scoring in the 18th minute, but it was a different United and indeed a different Burnley that turned down for the second half. Jay Rodriguez with an excellent goal to make it 1-1. That's how it would finish, meaning with West Ham beating Watford by 1-0, they move up to fourth in the table, one now clear of United. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we? Mark Ogden, Frank LaBeouf and Don Hutchinson. We'll hear from you boys in a moment. But Craig, let's start with you. What do you take away from this United performance?
Unsurprising. I mean, good for periods, good in patches, particularly in the first half, which is, I think, what we've come to expect. They haven't been able thus far to put a proper 90 minutes together. Yep. I thought there was some really bright, good stuff in the first half, particularly down the left-hand side. I thought Sancho looked lively at times, but Rashford looked a little bit more like his old self, had a couple of really good strikes, and they were dominant. And Burnley were poor, really, really awful. But then at half-time, they had to expect that Deitch was papering the dressing room with these players.
Yeah.
Because they're a big 6'6" front man and Weghorst. And Rodriguez up alongside them. They get no crosses into the box, Burnley. They didn't win any second balls. There was no physicality in the first half. And those are all the things you come to expect. And they got that in the second half. And Man United are a team to me, apart from all their other problems, and I don't know what the boys think, but they seem to me as if they're in a boxing match, and when it's going well, everything's hunky-dory. And then when the other team starts coming out punching and swinging, they're a bit scared.
Yeah.
And they don't know what to do. That was a bit like Middlesbrough in the FA Cup, and it was kind of similar to today. Burnley came out, started playing the Burnley way, and United for 20 minutes couldn't handle it.
Yeah, Frank, it's interesting, isn't it? Like a bright start from United. There were some great spells of play in that first half. But the second half, as Craig says, once Burnley started to go toe-to-toe with them, they seemed to struggle to cope.
Well, that says a lot about the level of Manchester United right now. So it's only depend on the opponent to put their level a little bit higher than the first half, and Manchester United is in trouble. Burnley was clearly poor the first half. There was only one team on the field, and it was Manchester United. And as Craig mentioned, in dressing room, in halftime, something has been said to Burnley players to maybe, you know, make sure that they're going to react. And they do react, and then you don't see Manchester United anymore. So, again, I don't know if it's physical, I don't know if it's in their heads, but definitely the level of the player that we see on the field is not big enough for a club with a history like that. And Burnley just had to lift up a little bit their level to put Manchester United in danger. That's appalling from Manchester.
What was striking again, Mark, and we've seen this so much from United, is that lack of cohesion. It just turns out into be an individual sport sometimes with this side, in the fact that when the chips are down, you don't see them coming together.
Yeah, there's nothing to knit them together, is there? It's a team that doesn't react well to setbacks, and like the guys have said, I think they started fairly well against Middlesbrough as well, but once they do go and concede a goal or go behind, it all falls apart and it is left to individuals to try and make a difference. You know, I thought Pogba was okay tonight, but I thought Rashford was poor. He didn't really come to the party at times. What they lack is just, you know, without harping back to the old days, but they lack some kind of cohesion in midfield. Two or three midfielders who can get together, control the game, control the tempo, dictate the play. United don't dictate games. They just don't. They either defend or they attack. There's nothing in the midfield. And when that's the case, they're going to get, you know, they're going to concede chances. So they just lack some, you know, experience and some wise old heads in midfield. It really is so poor to watch them at times. You know exactly what's going to happen. It's going to bypass the midfield. Defence will be under pressure or go the other way. And the forwards will just, you know, sometimes fall over each other to get a chance. So it's not very convincing, and I think we're going to see this to the end of the season because, you know, Ralf Rangnick hasn't really made an impact. Because the interim manager is almost like a, you know, part-time teacher, I don't think the pupils or the players are actually taking much notice. I think a lot of them are doing their own thing, and his message isn't getting through. And I think we'll see this. The season will drift along. They'll get knocked out of the Champions League either by Atletico Madrid or if they get through the next round. So this is what it's going to be like until a new manager comes in, I think.
But why, Don? You know, they're the good players out there on the pitch. Why is this a vulnerability about United?
And do you remember a couple of weeks ago you asked me who was going to finish in the top four, and I leant towards Man United and I said Galacticos. Well, that was the wrong term. They're Mavericks. That's what they are. They're not Galacticos anymore. And they're soft, and I think the whole club, Man United...
I don't think they were ever Galacticos, Don.
Yeah, you know what I mean, though.
Why would you bring up that again?
In their own right. Because they're Mavericks, because you can't rely on them. You could talk about systems. You could talk about the manager. The manager came out yesterday, and he gave what he thought is an honest interview. And I think Ralph Rangnick's a very honest man, too honest at times. And he was talking about finishing the top four, and he went, this club would be delighted if they finished in the top four. And I sat back and I thought, is that how far Man United have dropped where they'd be delighted to finish in the top four? And then you look at the players that are playing, and they are Mavericks. When it's going well, they look a really good side to watch individually. You watch them tonight, and Ronaldo came off the bench. He's bang out of form. Bruno's bang out of form. Harry Maguire's nowhere near the levels he's been over probably the last 2 or 3 years. So he's bang out of form as well. So at any given time, when it's not going their way, in my opinion, they carry passengers.
They've just played four teams. Let me think, who was it? Oh, three of them in the bottom half of the Premier League. One of them bottom of the Premier League. So Villa, Brentford, Burnley, the worst team at the moment, points-wise in the Premier League. I know they've got a bunch of games to catch up. And a team that are not in the playoff position in the Championship. And they've struggled in every one. They've either lost, drawn, or struggled. Brentford was... I sort of papering over it big style because it was David De Gea v Brentford in the first 45 minutes. So, yeah, I mean, it's just not surprising anymore. There's no wow factor to coming in the studio and going, oh, United have just played the worst team in the division and lost or drawn. There's no wow. How is it this managing? This is the new norm. This is the new norm. And you know, I thought some of the things Rashford did were okay. Over the piece of 90 minutes, a bit like Sancho, no. But I thought some of the things he did, but it's not enough. It's not enough. And there's so many problems. I mean, you know, Maguire's the captain. What's the point in giving him the armband?
Right.
What's the point? He's not a captain.
But then who do you give it to? Who are they? Well, De Gea's their best player yet again.
Well, I think I might as well just give it to the World Cup winner at the back next to him, Rafael Varane. I mean, I'm sure he speaks a little bit of English.
Right.
He can bark a few orders around. I mean, Maguire's just making too many bad decisions. You know, you got the booking.
Yeah, but Craig,
go on, Frank.
If you do that and you change the armband, first you kill Maguire, but on top of it you kill what could happen at some point, maybe a chemistry between Varane and Maguire, the thing that you are looking for. You're gonna create a rivalry, another one, you know, in the dressing room. Maybe you're gonna divide the dressing room, which is already a problem. And you won't do this for the best. I want to talk about the penalty.
He left Maguire out a few weeks ago. He was on the bench. He's already killed him enough. Maguire knows he doesn't fancy him. Maguire knows he's on borrowed time, particularly if that man has any say in the matter if he moves upstairs. So I think there's a bigger picture than that. I just don't think Harry... And a few weeks ago, I was ready to give him a second chance. We talked about players they might keep, and I thought, oh, maybe he's worth persevering. No, it's just not happening.
And Frank, you thought he should have been sent off?
Yes, for me, yes, because we don't know what De Gea is going to do. If De Gea was going to get on the ball, that we don't know, and we'll never know. But what we know is that Maguire intentionally stopped the action of the striker and is the last defender. So for me, it's a straight red card.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. We think we've been over this road before. I think if there's he's denying a clear goal scoring opportunity. If it's not violent conduct, which it wasn't, it was cynical. It's then denying a clear goal scoring opportunity. And when they looked at it on VAR and they rolled it back, there must have been a doubt that the Burnley player was going to get there ahead of David De Gea. That can be the only thing. Otherwise, they would have instructed the referee to go to the monitor and say, look, we don't think the goalkeeper was going to get there. So they must have looked at that.
So Cristiano Ronaldo not in the starting 11, as we mentioned. Rangnick was obviously asked about
that. I bet he's loving his time
ahead of the game. This is what he had to say about the decision to drop Ronaldo and start Cavani ahead. We played Burnley a couple of weeks ago and seen quite a few games here at Turf Moor. We knew in the early stages it will require a lot of running, chasing balls, a lot of fighting for second balls. So I decided to start with Cavani because this kind of profile suits him. Mark, what are they going to do with Ronaldo?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think Rangnick's right. I think we take the superstar Ronaldo out of the equation, and he's not played well enough to command a place in the team. I thought he was really poor against Middlesbrough. He couldn't get away from his defenders. He's got, I think, the only teams he's scored against in recent weeks are Norwich and Burnley, so that says it all, and one of those was a penalty. So Ronaldo's not performing, but he didn't sign up for Man United to spend a wet Tuesday night in February on the bench at Burnley. He just didn't. He wanted to be playing and scoring goals in those games. So they've got a lot of problems in the summer, as we know. They've got so many issues to address. Cavani's out of contract, will probably leave. Pogba's out of contract, will probably leave. They've got defenders they need to replace. They've got midfielders they need to replace. They're going to have a big decision about Ronaldo because he's got a year left on his contract. He's not going to want to stay and be a bit part player, which is probably what he is now. He's probably a 20-minute player at the end of games in terms of what he can do in the Premier League. But he's not going to stay for that. Now, the problem United have got is that he was signed up to a really big contract in the summer, probably about £500,000 a week, once you count everything that's involved. Who's going to pay that? Last season when he left Juventus, there were only two takers, Man City and Man United, in the running. City won't want him again. United, they could pay the wages. But where's he going to go? He can't go to the MLS because the money is just too big for MLS. So what's he going to do? Is he going to go to the Middle East, Qatar or Saudi Arabia? You know, what an end to his career that'll be, you know, especially if they miss out on the World Cup. So massive, massive summer for Ronaldo. And I wouldn't bet on him being at United next season because it doesn't fit. And if a new manager comes in, or when a new manager comes in, it's probably going to be in his favour for this situation to be addressed before he comes, because if it's Pochettino or somebody like that, he's not going to want Ronaldo. He's going to want somebody who can work hard, and Ronaldo has worked hard by this season. He has put it in, and I think he's shamed some of his younger teammates, but he's 37. I don't think he has the legs anymore to play as often as he wants to play.
Don, do you agree that he's a 20-minute player?
I think the problem is that, and I think you could probably say there's quite a few of them. I think Jesse Lingard's the same. Martial's exactly the same before he left. I'm reading on social media, and I think they're right in Marcus Rashford. He seems as though he might be best as an impact player as well. And just going back to the point I made before about the club and the team being soft, and then Frank brings up, you can't take the armband off Harry Maguire because it'll kill him. Dear me, is that where we've come from, where you can't take an armband off someone because it might hurt someone's pride? I mean, you've got to do what's best for the team or what's best for the club. If stripping Harry Maguire might kill him and dent his confidence, it might not. It might throw him the other way. Wearing that armband for a club like Man United might weigh quite heavy when you're not playing well. And it might be a burden, but that's part of the problem when I said they're soft.
Ronaldo, 20-minute player now? Is that where we're at?
Well, I wouldn't mind getting £500,000 a week for 20 minutes. It's like,
well, yes, of course.
Here and there. Well, I think at the end of the day, he'll have to accept that he's going to have to taper his game, and managers will see it that way. But I don't get the feeling that he's going to take that too well.
No.
Bearing in mind the kind of player he's been and his pomp. But things move on, and unless you're in a team that are all sort of built around you and, you know, you can just do what you need to do, then it's not really going to work. And as Augie said, when a new manager comes in, and there's not a hope in hell Ranić's getting the job at this point. It's just not going to happen. He's had absolutely no impact whatsoever. And as I said last week, he's inherited a bigger mess than he could ever have believed. I don't think it's a problem for Man United if Ronaldo, in terms of football. Mm-hmm. If he goes, he goes. If he stays, he stays. He can be a squad. But I think, as Mark said, it's the finances.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money to potentially have a guy there who is not going to be a happy chappy if he's not playing. That's going to filter through to the other players, and they're paying him an awful lot of money. In fact, that sounds familiar at Man United, doesn't it?
Indeed. It's Alexis Sanchez. Yeah, exactly. And you talk about money. You take a look at these stats that were released this week. United's net spend has been more than anybody else since 2012. They've lost over €1 billion on players. It's quite extraordinary when you take a look at these figures in black and white, Mark. And what is striking is the fact there doesn't seem to be any sort of light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I mean, I think these figures are really interesting because what it shows is that United's transfer dealings in that period, since Alex Ferguson left, have been disastrous. I can't think of any players that they've signed in that period that have actually improved while at United. Maybe Bruno Fernandes could say that you could get a bit more money for him than actually paid for him. But if you go through the signings they've made, I don't see any of them coming out to their end saying they've made them better, which is an indictment of Man United. Now, think of the strikers they've signed over that period. You know, some on loan, some for fees, whatever, some free transfers. Falcao, Ibrahimovic, Lukaku, Edinson Cavani, Ronaldo. Apart from Lukaku, how many of those players are people you could say you could get a good 4 or 5 years out of and get a decent return? None. The transfer dealings are terrible. And I had a chat with Ed Woodward recently before he left and said, why don't you make signs like Liverpool? You know, when Liverpool were building, they were brave enough to sign players from relegated teams like Andy Robertson from Hull and Gini Wijnaldum from Newcastle, who became great players, Champions League winners, Premier League winners. And I said, look, you wouldn't sign these players because Man United have an issue. It's almost like their signings have to be headline-making, box office signings for big money. They don't see any value in the market. They waste so much money. Donny van der Beek, 40 million, waste. You know, all these, Angel Di Maria, 50-odd million pounds wasted. They don't make smart acquisitions. And they still haven't done that. And we're talking 8, 9 years now, and Edward was left, and he talked about how they've got this great new recruitment team, and they're ready to make better signings. But, you know, the time is now, or the time was a month ago, or 6 months ago, when the window was open. I haven't seen United make a smart transfer acquisition for a long time. You know, even Jadon Sancho, they paid over 70 million for him last summer when there was nobody else in for him. Borussia Dortmund didn't have any clubs chasing him down. 70 million pounds. It's just crazy. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, 50 million pounds for a right back that you know, basically can't pass the ball. So they waste so much money. So those numbers for me don't surprise me because they may spend money on players, but there's never any resale value. They never make a profit because they don't make them better.
Okay, I'm imagining Ed Woodward never gave you an answer when he was asked this question about the wastefulness.
He disagreed. He disagreed. Yeah.
He disagreed.
He felt that they have made, you know, because I mean, they made a profit on Daniel James, but it has been a litany of transfer disasters since 2012. Probably prior to Woodward coming in, I mean, let's look at some of the signings Sir Alex made. People forget how the rot set in before David Moyes and Edward came. Sir Alex, you know, Bebe, Gabriel Obertan, all these players that were hopeless, basically. And I think the rot started when they signed Van Persie. It was a great signing, but Van Persie he kind of broke the mould in the sense that United started buying players at the wrong end of the career. Prior to Van Persie, they would never sign a player over 27. That was a rule that David Gill and Ferguson stuck to. We don't sign players over 27 because we want them to give Man United the best years of their career. Van Persie came in, was brilliant for a year, and it broke the mould. And I think United are still paying the price for the success, the short-term success of Van Persie, because all the signings since have been, certainly the big ones, short-term measures.
Dan.
Yes.
You've made a net loss of $1 billion.
Yes.
You're struggling to get in the top four. You've sacked how many managers and had to pay them off? And he disagrees on the success.
Of course he's going to disagree. What's he going to say?
If that doesn't tell you about the way this club has been run under the ownership of the Glazers, what the hell?
What about Daniel James? Go on, Frank.
Listen, he did admit they made mistakes early on. I think the Van Gaal years, from Van Gaal onwards, they feel they've done... When Van Gaal left, they think since Van Gaal, they've had a better fist of it. But, you know, I think you look at the players you've signed and I'm not quite sure that's right.
I think Dan, the main concern that I have about that club, it's a real mystery, in fact, you know. I think how fast you can forget where you come from, the genes that you have in your history. You have to name all the players who made the history of the club. And starting from George Best, for example, and the former, all the players who died on that plane a long time ago in the 70s. They were all coming from the club. They were all from the academy. And the best player that you have who came from another club were players like Ronaldo at his beginning or Cantona coming from Leeds. I don't remember a player coming from a crazy amount of money doing something fantastic for Manchester United. It's only the player who have something to prove or just starting their career who brought the lights and the brightness of that into that club. That's it. When they started to spend money and crazy money on players, it's where they started to lose everything. And it's been for a decade now, and some people have to pay for that because that's enough. You know, that club cannot stand like that.
Wow, that was a lot on Manchester United. Just a reminder, a lot more content, and it's not all United, I promise, over on our ESPN FC channel on YouTube. Don't forget to go over there and subscribe.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Big result at the bottom of the table. Newcastle coming from behind to beat Everton by 3-1. Frank Lampard's side would take the lead against the run of play. Newcastle, they're getting three, thoroughly deserving of the victory. And it puts them now, in fact, just 1 point off Everton. But I suppose more importantly for Newcastle fans, 2 points clear of the relegation zone. This is kind of a Don derby, of course. Don, the team you supported against the team that you captained. And Newcastle were good.
They were brilliant, Dan. I mean, the standard, I have to say, for the first half an hour wasn't great. There were some very comical moments. Both teams were very nervous. Second half, Newcastle was so good. I mean, St. Maximin got voted man of the match, but I thought Kieran Trippier was man of the match by a million miles. And in my opinion, if I was Eddie Howe, I'd take the armband off Jamal Lascelles and give it to Trippier, because the Newcastle fans absolutely adore him. He was getting stuck in. He was cool in possession. He was calm. Second half, Newcastle grew in a bit of confidence. I thought Matt Target played well. Trippier played well. Lascelles and Cher weren't particularly solid. Midfield, I thought Willock played well. Shelby did okay. Top end of the pitch, Chris Wood needs better service. Ryan Fraser and St. Maximin were really, really good. And then come off the bench at the end. Gimenez come off the bench at the end, and he had one or two little back heels and back flicks. And you can see, you know, he's going to be loved at Newcastle. It wasn't quite the game for him. I was surprised before the game, Dan. I thought he would have started, but he didn't. He came off the bench. So all in all, I mean, a huge win. But I've got to say, Everton were hopeless.
Newcastle and give themselves a little bit of room, of course, looking to avoid the drop after this big takeover. Brought in a number of players in January, as Don mentioned, Bruno coming off the bench. Kieran Trippier has been excellent. It's interesting, isn't it? We saw Atleti, and we saw them obviously against Barcelona, yep, and how weak they were at the back. Yep. To let Trippier go in the manner that they did and the performance that he put in today, yeah, it's more a head scratcher, doesn't it?
It just smacks to me like they've granted the player the wish to return to England.
Yeah.
Which, listen, if you're the club in Simeone, I kind of tip my cap to that rather than try and fight it if that was the case.
But exactly sort of player you want in this sort of situation.
Yeah, absolutely, because Vasalico is an experienced player at Atleti, but he's in his 30s and he's getting a roasting now. It seems every week he plays. But man, Trippier, he's never been a Trent Alexander-Arnold. He's never going to be this guy that, you know, just gives you the wow factor, but he gives you a 7 or 8 out of 10,
yeah,
almost every time. He knows the position really well. I think his stint in Spain has given him so much more experience of a different league and different tactics, and he's learned more, I feel. He's set pieces, as you saw, brilliant. He'll get stuck in. He's a good passer. He's not a brilliant passer. He's a good passer of the ball as well. He's a good crosser of the ball. So, yeah, I think Target's also a good player on the other side, but I think he is the jewel in that back four. And, of course, Dan Byrne from Brighton will probably come in sooner rather than later and partner Lascelles. Unless he goes to a back three,
right,
who knows, he might do. But I think their transfer market alone, in my opinion, is enough to stay up. I don't think they will be in that bottom three come end of the season.
What was wrong with Everton?
Wow, I mean, where'd you start, Dan? They were hopeless. I mean, a million miles from the performance against Brentford. I thought they looked very edgy. I think if Frank Lampard could have the 24 hours, 48 hours that he had in the window, after this performance, he'd buy centre-backs because Michael Keane's completely out of form. Yerry Mina picked up a thigh injury. He had to go off injured. Holgate's lacking confidence. I still think they've got a little bit of an off, you know, Dan. I was on social media and Everton fans were all over the place thinking they're going down. I think Richarlison can sort of stop believing his own hype. Damari Gray, Anthony Gordon, Andros Townsend, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I think there's enough to try and fire them to safety. There's three worse teams than Everton for sure. But my word, at the back, they were hopeless second half. They were so bad.
Who's more likely to go down, Newcastle or Everton, Don?
I don't think either, Dan. I think, and that's not biased, Newcastle fan, they've just, you know, they've went back-to-back wins for the first time this season. When you get back-to-back wins, Dan, and when you're in the bottom three, it's so valuable. You see Watford lose tonight. Burnley picked up a point. I know Burnley have got games in hand, but Newcastle have got a game in hand, I think, on Everton. I think on Leeds, if I'm correct as well. And I think Brentford are in free fall. I think the signings, as Craig said, there's enough quality there that's going to get them away from the bottom three. Not by a million miles.
Who's more likely, though, Don?
I don't think either, Dan, to be honest. I think both will be fine.
No, that's not the answer. There has to be an answer to that. Well, there has to be one or the other.
Well, if I'm going one or the other, I'd probably say Newcastle.
Right.
I think Everton have got more than enough. I think Newcastle are, apart from tonight, Newcastle traditionally, under Eddie Howard at the start of the season, don't score many goals. Tonight was a little bit of a fluke. I think a long time ago since they scored three, and they don't get a lot of service. So if you're pushing me for an answer, I'd say Newcastle, but I still think both will be fine.
I'll be honest, I switched off on Everton a little bit in terms of, you know, they're not high on our list anyway at the moment because they're not, just haven't pulled up any trees for a while, as good a club as they are. But I sort of switched off on them, just looking at everybody else, thinking, no. But I know Benitez is not the, I know he's not the apple of their eye, and I know it's not great there in the football, but no. Relegation, no. But I'm looking at what they've got. I'm looking about what they've brought in.
Yeah.
You know, what Van de Beek are we going to get? What Dele Alli are we going to get? I mean, on paper, it could be good for them. But I would be worried if I was an Everton fan. I would be worried because I do agree with Don. I think there are three worst teams, but there's not many putting in worst performances at the moment.
Right.
So I didn't think a couple of months ago they were going to be in this big a problem, but they're deep in the doo-doo at the moment.
A big task then for Frank Lampard. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. More Premier League talk, likes of Liverpool, I think Spurs are in action, Manchester City as well. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Coppa Italia action today. Inter being run by 2-0. Edin Dzeko would open the scoring early on. Alexis Sanchez then guaranteeing a place for Inter in the semi-finals. We're welcome Gab Marcotti into this one. Gab, I suppose the obvious question to start things off was, what was the reception that Jose Mourinho got on his return?
Oh, absolutely tremendous. Obviously, Inter fans remembering that this is the man who delivered the treble back in 2010. I think of all his previous clubs that he's been at, and that probably this includes Porto, there is no place that would give him as rousing a reception. And he's just so universally loved, where they only see light and no darkness whatsoever, as Inter Milan.
And I suppose the great thing is as well, from an Inter fans perspective, Roma don't kind of offer that sort of tough opponent, so you can afford them that. And obviously Inter winning 2-0 today.
Yeah, I mean, It's not super fair on Roma there, Dan. It does get really uphill when Inter score, you know, almost straight away after just 2 minutes. Roma tried to get back into the game. Zaniolo missed a tremendous one-on-one chance. But then also Inter, you know, hitting the woodwork with Barella before that. And, you know, and just as in the second half, it looked like Roma could be mounting something. Mkhitaryan got into the game. Boom, there comes a killer. A tremendous long-range effort from, of all people, Alexis Sanchez. Check out the goal because, it's as clean a strike as you're going to see.
Yeah, beautiful goal from Alexis Sanchez. Inter then bouncing back, of course, after that defeat against Milan at San Siro at the weekend. Let's just remind you how things stand at the top of the table. Just 1 point then separating the two Milan clubs. Meanwhile, we'll talk about the title race in a moment, Gab, but let's talk about Juventus, shall we? Vlahovic, obviously, with a dream debut.
Tremendous debut, not just for the fact that he could have had a treble, but he just looks so natural. Allegri played him up front with Alvaro Morata and Paulo Dybala, the latter two starting from wide positions. It worked so well. He linked up so well, especially with Dybala. I don't know if they're going to keep this because on paper looks maybe perhaps a little too attacking for Max Allegri's tastes. But it showed that he just wanted to hit the ground running, and the people around him are going to do everything they can to get him the service that he needs to be a difference maker.
How impressed were you with him, Don?
He was ridiculous, Dan. For a man that was making his debut, he looked as though he'd been there for quite a while. I would imagine it's quite nervy when you pull off a sort of black and white shirt and you're playing for Juve. You know, he was heavily involved in the game. He scored a brilliant goal where he lobbed the goalkeeper. He had one with his right foot that he probably should have scored. He had two penalty claims. He was heavily involved. I think, as Gab said, it was interesting that Dybala played and Morata played, and Vlahovic will get all the headlines, but I thought Morata had one of his best games for quite a while. And this is Juve's best form. I think they're unbeaten in 10. They're absolutely flying. Atalanta have stuttered of late. They've now gone into the top four, which I thought a few months back, Juve, the form that they're in, playing a 4-4-2 and Rabiot playing left wing, I thought they've got no chance of getting there. So their form has been really, really good. But this guy had the dream debut. Dennis Zakaria as well played in midfield, who come from Gladbach. He scored as well on his debut. So it was one of them performances and team performances where it was really good. The only worry, I think, for Max Allegri, the last 20 minutes of the game, he was scratching his head a little bit. They were giving the ball away and giving the ball away sloppy. And this was against Verona. And he'll want to fix that when they come up against the big sides in Europe.
They're 8 points off Inter at the top. Any chance, Gab?
To win the title? I don't think so. I mean, it's not just they're 8 points behind. Inter obviously have a game in hand as well. And they'd also have to get past Napoli and Milan. Let's not get carried away here. As Don said, it was all doom and gloom not that long ago. Now they're into the top four. I don't think Atalanta are just going to crumble. And Juve, obviously, you know, they've got the Champions League, they've got the Coppa Italia, they've got a lot of things to worry about. It's not like Vlahovic has fixed every issue straight away, but certainly dream debuts for him and Zakaria. And as Don said, the players around them responding, playing better, Morata and Dybala certainly, than they have in previous outings.
Don, Inter still big favourites for you despite that defeat against Milan?
I think so, Dan. I thought at the start of the season they were my favourites. I think they bought well after losing two or three players. I think they're strong. I think the system's good at Tutsi individuals. They'll go on a run again, I'm pretty sure. It'll be tight, and Milan and Napoli are responding, but I'd still fancy Inter.
You agree, Gab?
I'm not so sure. I don't think they're big favourites. I think they're... I think it's... we're going to know a lot more after this weekend, obviously. Inter taking on Napoli. I mean, Inter could be third come Monday. Of course, they still have the game in hand. It is against Bologna, but that's no gimme either. So I think this is a very, very tight title race, and I think it could well stay that way. Milan have their injured guys coming back. Tomori was on the bench. He should start. Inter, by the way, will play Napoli without Bastoni, arguably their best defender. He picked up a knock against Roma, came off. So, and I still think Napoli have other levels that they can go to. So I look at this, and to me, it promises to be a nail biter.
Great stuff as always, Gab. Thank you very much. Just a reminder, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast goes in depth to that exciting Milan derby. You can check that out over on the website.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to
World Cup
everyone
tomorrow.
Who's
can't wait.
On. Yeah, you are. It's exciting.
Yeah, oh, hello, Chelsea. Oh, hello.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Can't wait.
Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next, where we talk about the boys and their nerves ahead of big games. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Look at Don bobbing away to the music. Frank LaBeouf is with us as well. Craig Burley has kept his tie on here in the studio.
I had a decision to make during the show.
Because of the chins issue.
Yeah. It's because of the gym issue.
the
gym issue, Don, has brought on a chins issue. And the chins issue has brought on a tie collar issue for the current wardrobe. And I was thinking, I was just about to go non-tie when the show started, when I got 3, 2, 1, and I didn't have time to take it off.
No.
So I had to go.
There it is.
I've got £10 to go, I know that.
Ah, well, there
I hear they're opening in the gym.
Perfect. Good.
I hear they're opening it soon.
Oh, it's a negative start, Don.
Don't.
Which manager in the Premier League is most likely to get the sack?
Which manager? I mean, knowing Watford's model, probably Roy Hodgson. That's a great question.
Oh.
That is a good question.
Can we have an answer?
Question. Well, it's a hard one because I don't really think anyone's under that amount of pressure. Teams at the bottom have changed their managers. I don't think Leeds would sack Bielsa. I'll go with Bielsa, even though I would hate that to happen because I'm a Bielsa fan. But if they drift and they lose two or three more, they might panic.
What about your boy Frank?
No, he's only just got the job done. No.
Who's above them?
No.
I don't think Deitch will go at Burnley, but they have got new ownership.
Yeah.
Don't think he'll
go. Rodgers is okay. He's got enough money in the bank.
Yeah, I think he's fine. That was a disaster for them.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I think all the sort of protagonists have gone.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Craig, Frankie de Jong received a lot of stick recently about his performances. Do you think he's somewhat redeemed himself in the big game against Atleti? Also, is he more comfortable in that deeper role and conducting play?
Well, I don't think he played that deep against Atleti because Busquets played. I think he did a bit of both, did a bit of everything, which is what I would expect from Frankie de Jong. I think he's a player who... even though he's not big in stature, but he still has enough defensive, deeper lying attributes. But also, and I think we saw it in the game before against Alaves when he was making runs into the box. We saw it again against Atleti. So yeah. I think he can do more, but I think he can do a bit of everything. I think he can conduct the play from deeper and make those runs into the box that our colleague Stuart Robson has always asked for. But he was certainly better because as a whole Barcelona.
Yeah. Yeah, they were good. Frank, I was watching John Terry talking about you and how you helped him in his early days. Was he that good when he was a teenager? Oh, Frank.
Of course he was fantastic. He was a radio wire. That's something that I saw the first time I saw him. I remember, and Craig can witness that, where in winter, he was the only one training with shorts and short sleeves. And he was an He barely warmed up. He was running everywhere. He was very tough. We saw that he had a future. He had to, let's say, make sure that his will wasn't too much, you know, in terms of tackling and everything, that he has to centralize everything to make sure he could be the player that he became, and he did very well. And, you know, when I signed, when I left the club and I knew that he will take my place over, I said to him, it's your time now. Do what you have to do, and I'm sure you're gonna be successful. Well, I saw him at the end of his career. I say, well, you blew me over. You know, blew me up. It was absolutely fantastic.
What a mentor, Frank LeBeuf. It's your turn now,
it's
son.
Time. It's your turn.
It's like a
George,
star.
It's your time to come in every day and just talk. And training every freaking day.
Did you two go inside when you were in Chelsea?
Who?
John Terry.
Yeah, I was a young boy when I was there. Yeah.
In the youth team.
Yeah.
And him and Jody Morris and one or two others. What a crew they were.
Yeah.
As youngsters. I can't remember the exact time frame, but clearly he knew John was going to be a player. But they actually sent him out to Nottingham Forest on loan.
Right.
I can't remember exactly what year and for how long. But they were shrewd enough. They knew he wasn't quite ready. Maybe he was playing a few games in the reserves. But they sent him out to Nottingham Forest to get some experience and some game time, which was clever. And then he came back and then he worked his way into the first team. So, yeah, he was managed well. But you could see... by his build and his stature, he was going to be a player.
Don, do you want to join in the John Terry love fest?
No, yeah, I like a bit of JT. Proper captain. Been out with him a few times. Good lad.
Oh.
Pretty sure Frank or Craig will endorse that. Unbelievable player. I think he maximised his career, didn't he? I mean, what a pro.
Hey, Don, did you notice Don earlier? That was a lovely picture you put out earlier, Don, with...
What picture did he pick out?
He was watching...
Which?
He was watching... You were watching the football with your grandkids.
You mean Dougie and Fletcher were five?
Oh, yeah. His twins.
Your two boys. I mean, one of them had an Everton shirt on, and one of them had a Newcastle. Well, did you just tell them to put that, or are they actually following two teams?
No, it's not by design. They've got one's got a Liverpool, one's got an Everton kit, one's got a Real Madrid, one's got a Barca kit. My brother's obviously a Newcastle fan, and so am I. So my brother sent me Newcastle tops down. They've got loads of different tops.
Who do they support, Don?
They don't, Dan. They're like me. They're a little bit weird. So in the Euros, I said to Dougie, I said, "Who are you going to support, Dougie?" And he doesn't really know what support means because he's only five. And he went. I like black and black.
Okay.
And I'm thinking black and black. Germany. So
yeah.
He went. So you got a Germany kit, black and black. And
nice.
Fletcher's a little bit left layer. Fletcher's a little bit different. He's a little bit sort of. A little bit kooky, shall we say. And he went, I want red, green, red.
Okay.
And I was like, red, green, red. Portugal!
Perfect.
So in the summer, one was supporting Germany and one was supporting Portugal, just because they like the colours.
I'm wondering who they've taken this kind of trait off.
Well, I know. Well, there you go.
There's a new
another
one on
kid for Don coming soon as well. Another kid for Don coming soon. That's exciting.
Another one in April coming.
I mean, Frank, do your kids care about football at all?
My son went to the Nîmes Academy when he was like 16 or 17, but he had a back problem. So, well, I'm not sure it was a real back problem, but he said, "Well, you know, I'm too hurt, so I want to give up." I said, "Okay." And now he's an actor. He's on stage sometimes, and he works on that. So I guess he's following daddy's path. But he's good on acting. I guess he's better than me.
There we go. And Frank, do you think the recent turnover at centre-back for Bayern will affect them next year? In the last 2 years, they've lost Boateng, Alaba and now Süle.
It's always tricky to change the individuals, you know, when in such an important spot on the field. But they showed during their history that it wasn't a problem for them. So... it was a time for Boateng and well, especially Boateng to get out of Bayern Munich. I think it was his performances weren't that good. I was surprised Alaba left because Alaba is a fantastic player. But always been the choice of Bayern to find new juries, I would say, and the player that they have, and Sulle is one of the experienced ones, are fitting them good. So I have no problem and no concern about Bayern Munich. They know what they have to do and they know the recipe of getting good players.
Ask Frank if Messi will match Neymar's impact at PSG. Why is he mute on Messi underperforming? I guess if it was Neymar, he would bring it up even in his dreams.
If I've been harsh on Neymar, it's mostly because of his behavior towards opponents, his behavior around the club. We don't hear about anything about Messi. And we don't hear that Messi is teasing the opponents, that Messi is doing something special during February and Rio Carnival, or his sister's birthday, if he has a sister. About the game, I always said when Neymar had a good game that he was a very good player. And I always said about Messi that we're still waiting for the good Messi. It's only last week with the last game that I say, well, we saw a bit better about Messi this season, and maybe it would be the time where we're gonna see Messi coming back from his best. But I've never been too nice to Messi and too harsh on Neymar. I've just been realistic, I think.
Final question. Oh. Don, how nervous were you for commentating your first game? Were you more or less nervous compared to your football debut?
More
really?
Nervous. Yeah, more. I worked with Steve Bauer, who's a brilliant commentator. And he gave me a great little line, and he said, take yourself back to when you played your first game. He went, what were you like when you played your first game? And I went, obviously really nervous. And he went, and what were you like after 50 games? I went, I was fine. He went, commentary's the same. He went, keep it simple, first game. He went, you'll find your voice. You'll find what you're good at and what you're bad at. And he went, in 50 games time, he went, you'll be fine. But I think my first game, Dan, I think one of my first games was a German game as well. So fresh into commentating on the Bundesliga. And you just have this like, you're just petrified because you think, oh, pronunciations, I'm not going to pronounce them right, I'm going to get things wrong. And then, as I said, you keep it simple and you concentrate on what you see. And then before you know it, once you're in the league and you're watching the league, you absolutely love it. And I'm like that with the Bundesliga and Serie A this season, as well as the Prem.
You didn't get nervous, did you?
Just like now. A little.
Yeah, really? I can't imagine you ever nervous about anything.
No. Well, I mean,
that brash arrogance.
Well, sorry, that's the case.
He's French. He's French. Greg Burley's French now.
I started doing radio commentaries when I was still playing, when I was mid-20s. And I didn't start doing TV commentaries. I did TV studio when I was playing, but I didn't start actually doing... So I had a lot more experience in radio.
Okay.
Before I did my first TV.
Right. No, didn't have to worry about
it. It was a little
about...
bit different because obviously with the monitors and
yeah.
All that. So yeah, I wasn't nervous, I was a little bit apprehensive.
Right.
That went years ago.
And what about like when you do a World Cup final? Does that the sense of occasion?
Yeah, I wasn't, no, because I've been working at that point for 57 years. long. So when I was lucky enough to do the World Cup final for ITV Sport, no, I wasn't. I don't think you're nervous, you're just used to doing it, just want to make sure you try and do a good job.
Right.
Horrible game as well, so that didn't help. So, yeah, that was difficult. But, no, I'm not nervous about that, no. I would have been nervous had I'd only been working, say I'd left playing and I'd been doing TV 6 months, and then somebody had said, you're doing the World Cup final for ITV.
Right.
I think that would have been a different matter.
Right. Frank, when you've been most nervous, your professional debut at football, acting or TV?
Oh, no, football, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
And you know what? The nice story about my first game that I played, that I started, it was against Nice, in Nice. I asked the physio to strap my ankle because I twisted my ankle a couple of weeks before. And he did too much. But I didn't want to complain because I was young and I just started. But after 30 minutes, I fell down because there were no blood on my foot, on my right foot, after 30 minutes. So, but I didn't want to say anything, so, you know. but I couldn't run. You know, my foot was completely white, and so they took the strap off, and I did another 15 minutes, and half time they put me out, and they substituted me. But that was my first game. You know.
What about the World Cup final, Frank? How nervous were you then?
Well, you know, I think it's something I don't even want to talk about because that was unbearable. You know, you want to hide in a forest. You don't want to be on the field. And, well, when you play, it's okay. But it's just before, you know, during the day and under the tunnel. But during the game, you just play a game. We're a football player. But before, it's a nightmare.
Don, did you have a game like that where you were extra nervous?
No, I used to thrive off it, Dan, a little bit. Me and Craig both played at Wembley. And I can remember, I think the calmest I think I've ever been and the most pumped I think I've ever been for a football match is being at Wembley and the English national anthem was being played. Sorry, the Scottish national anthem was being played and the English fans were booing like you wouldn't believe, like horrendous whistles, like booing the whole stadium. Was going ballistic over the Scottish national anthem. And I was like, loving it. I was like, I love being in the Lions' Den. I was like, this is what we're here for. This is what, like Frank said, the worst bits, like the preparation the night before, can't sleep, can't eat any food because you're so like anxious and you're nervous and you've got that anxious belly. Then the morning of the game, you're a little bit the same. But once you put your kit on and once you put your boots on, it's like your comfort zone and standing there taking all that abuse, loved it.
That is it. What happened in that game, Don?
Don scored.
Yeah, there we go. Waiting for him to... No worry, he brought it up. There it is. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. There'll be plenty of Premier League action for us to reflect on.
Is there?
Yes, there is plenty. Trust me.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.